call the answer line, where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello and a warm welcome from a specially glass-paneled studio we've constructed here at the Radio Netherlands stand at Ferrato. And you only have to open the studio door here to capture the whole atmosphere of the exhibitions. Electronic musical instruments that can impersonate conventional instruments are here. There's even one that will print out what you're playing onto a musical score. And then, in another part of the hall, one's continuously bombarded with the bleep-bleep of video games, which appear to be getting more and more complicated and more numerous. Of course, there's every type of hi-fi equipment here too. Amps, cassette decks, record players, making it almost impossible to choose, although you can only look here, not buy from the stands. And one of the Dutch radio amateur organisations, the Veron, is also present here, giving an example of another use for the shortwave bands. The main news here is the introduction of the Philips Sony Compact Disc and the Philips Video Disc too, both of which use low-power lasers to read digitally encoded information from specially made discs. The compact disc is designed basically to replace the gramophone or phonograph, and it's been given its world premiere here. The laser disc, which adds a picture to stereo sound, has in fact already been launched in the USA and Britain, though it's the first time the Dutch public have seen it. But what about something to interest the radio enthusiast, or even someone with a casual interest in the shortwave medium? Well, there are some curious paradoxes, first of all. For example, the radio interference section of the post office has a large stand in one of the main halls where they're giving out leaflets about how they're reducing interference. Whilst at the entrance, two FM pirates have parked their vans and are quite openly broadcasting live and illegally pop music and interviews with passers-by. But there are also new shortwave receivers to be found if you look closely, almost exclusively aimed at the holidaymaker who wants to keep in touch with events back home. The Philips company, for example, has added a new set to its line. So I asked Ernst van der Velde of Philips Audio Products here in Holland for more details.
That's a very simple receiver. You can take along very easily. It does have six shortwave bands divided all over the bands. It's about 250 guilders in the shops. And you can, because it's so small, you can take it along with you very easily. And I think that will be a success in the market.
Okay, there was a time when Philips, certainly in Holland, didn't have anything in its shortwave range, and now you've suddenly brought sets back. Why is that?
Because the interest of the Dutch people, they have a lot of spare time. And they try to find nice things to be occupied with. And that's why we think there's a good market. It's not so very big, beside the amateurs. But the interest is growing, we think, at this very moment.
Are you doing more product research to bring more products onto the market,
say,
in 84?
In the coming years you will find full synthesized receivers for very reasonable prices, I think. And then we will have a full range of those sets.
The new set they've launched is called the Philips Compass. And looking at a sample, it bears a striking resemblance to the Grundig Yachtboy receivers. It's the same size, has the same features, and covers six shortwave bands too. Well, with me now is someone who takes an interest in receivers, Wim van Amstel. Some of the controls are in a slightly different part of the set, but when we test this receiver shortly, Wim, I wouldn't be surprised to find it somewhat similar inside.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised either. It's certainly not exactly a mirror reflection, but you get the same idea if you look at it. Perhaps a small highlight looking at the shortwave receiver market is the completion of the Grundig Yachtboy series by the introduction of two models featuring a digital frequency counter, namely the Yachtboy 450 and 650.
But the radio itself is the same?
The radio itself is the same. The digital clock features now, with a special press button, also a digital frequency readout. And it looks very interesting. Of course, we didn't test it yet either, but perhaps we'll do so in the future.
What about the price?
The price is quite impressive. It's between 400 and 500 guilders, which runs at about $200 to $300.
And about £75 in the UK. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else?
But the other manufacturers, like Sony or Panasonic, were showing about the same receivers as they did at the previous Virato in 1980.
So two new sets from Grundig, adding additional digital frequency readout to what's already a popular range of travelling shortwave receivers. We'll be reviewing these fully shortly in the programme, but as you've heard, the receiver part of the set is unchanged from cheaper models such as the Grundig 300. The Grundig interest in the shortwave market was explained to me by Grundig Nederland's manager, Peter Evans.
I think that the Yachtboy series eigenlijk op dit moment de populairste serie is in Nederland.
I think that the Yachtboy series is one of the most popular shortwave radio series here in Holland, and we're aiming it at the tourist market in general. Radio Netherlands has been pushing its Dutch language broadcasts, particularly directed to the Mediterranean area, on the domestic market, and this has resulted in a demand for simple-to-operate shortwave radios. We're also doing our part to promote shortwave radio now, not only to the general public, but also among our dealers. In fact, as from next year, we'll be including station information packed in with the Yachtboy series from the factory. So someone buying this six-band receiver will have some idea of what to find on it. And sets sold in Holland will have details about Radio Netherlands. Those in West Germany will have schedules of Deutsche Welle, and I believe that Swiss Radio International is also involved in the scheme. This, we believe, is an important step forward, so that the consumer can appreciate the piece of equipment better and understand what it can do.
De consument veel voordelen van dit product te geven.
Philips have also said they'll be running a similar scheme with their cheaper shortwave receivers in 1983. National Panasonic, on the other hand, aren't giving so much prominence to shortwave receivers this time round. And the new PLL synthesized receiver, to compete with the Sony ICF 2001 that's appearing in North America at the moment, isn't being launched on the European market for the time being. Mr. Bauman of National's importer here in Holland told me that there were no new sets planned yet.
Now to increase that range, no. No, not at this moment. Interest is not in that high. And for portable, we concentrate more to the smaller portables. Yes, maybe you know our RF 8000 and 9000, the famous Panasonic models with the 13, 15 bands systems. Extremely high priced. That's only for a very selective group. In general, if you talk about the total market and our total turnover, then there is the average models like radio cassette combinations and a very small radio and cassette players. That's most biggest part of the market at this moment.
Sony, on the other hand, did launch their new active antenna at Virato for the European market to assist shortwave reception in apartments. And they seem more optimistic about shortwave when I spoke to a representative of the company that imports Sony equipment into this country.
My name is Kisako Terasawa. I'm a product manager for General Audio and Car Stereo.
Which is the most popular shortwave receiver that you're selling at the moment in the Netherlands?
In Netherlands, that is ICF 2001. And it is really going so well. And we have problems of back orders, actually.
Can you give me some idea of how many you're selling? I mean, is it hundreds? Is it thousands? Is it tens of thousands of these sets?
Per month, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit less than 1,000.
A bit less than 1,000 a month of the 2001s?
Only for ICF 2001, I mean. But, of course, for ICF 7600, we are enjoying also very good sales. We already supply with the ICF 2001 with a copy of World Radio TV Handbook, and that helps a lot to those end users who want to find out exactly the station which they want.
Well, why is Sony interested in pushing shortwave? Because after all, compared to the rest of your lines, when you're going for hi-fi, you're going for quality, shortwave isn't going to give you much fidelity, is it?
Because that is the Sony policy. They we want to develop always new market. We want to try everything. And why not this shortwave radio lineup? That is the marketing policy.
One thing I don't understand is why haven't you introduced the 6500W in Europe? Or at least in Holland?
That was only because of the quite high price compared with the features of this radio. Market price was situated between ICF 2001 and ICF 760A. And for the people who want to pay more for the good quality, we have ICF 2001. And for the other people, just like students or just they want to have a shortwave radio for during holidays, they have a lower budget model, ICF 7600. And ICF 6500, that's a beautiful machine. But price-wise, that is not competitive. So that's why we dropped, and we prefer to concentrate on ICF 2001 and ICF 760A. But in the future, if we can get new models in between, and if that is quite acceptable, we will of course introduce new model in between, price-wise, I mean. And we are going to expand more the lineup of shortwave radios, because now it is very fashionable.
Well, where there's a market, there's usually competition. And in the next few months, Japan will be getting a new competitor, in the European market at least, from Taiwan. In October, a small PLL shortwave receiver will appear, made by the Sanjin Company of Taipei. They're buying many of the components in Japan. And as Henny van Wijk of Electronics Nederland, who are importing the sets under the Audiosonic label, explains, this particular Taiwan company has decided exactly what it wants to do.
Yes, that's correct. But the factory who is producing this kind of item, they want to specialize in this kind of item to make them as small as possible. So they want to beat Sony and want to beat Philips, just to tell them this is the lightest, this is the smallest, and we have more presets.
Right, okay. Talking of presets, how many can you in fact put in the memory?
Total memory, you can store 25 channels, but only 5 channels per band, and then you have a feature of additional programming or 5 features, but then you have to choose one of the bands.
So, for example, if you wanted to put 10 shortwave frequencies in the memory, you could do that?
Yeah, that's the maximum possibility, so you can program 10 broadcasting stations in one band.
Now, the tuning system is such that you can put stations into the memory very easily. Mm-hmm. If you want to actually tune from one end of the band to the other, it's slightly complicated in the sense that it goes rather slowly because you've got an up and down switch. Yep. It's not a conventional tuning knob. But it works on batteries?
Yeah, it works on batteries. It works on 4 penlight batteries, 6-volt. But it only has 2 additional, let's say, calculator batteries inside. Just one for the light and one for the display and the memories. So the memories is working independent on the normal batteries. And even if you want to change the memory battery, which will last for over 1.5 years, then you even have 60 seconds to change the battery, and the stored programs will remain in the memory.
Right, it also has a clock built in as well on the liquid crystal display, and also a sleep function, so it's quite versatile.
Yes.
So what's the price here in Holland? What's it going to be?
The retail price will be below 400 kilos, so we think it will start in the shop at 398.
The shortwave range goes from 5.8 megahertz up to 15.5.
Yes.
Now, the problem with 15.5 megahertz is it doesn't cover some of the out-of-band frequencies in the 19-meter band. Are there any plans to include that, say, in a future model?
Yes, that's already because mainly through your organization that we learned that it's quite essential that this frequency should also be inside this radio. So we have advantage against the Philips machine. So only for the first version, we already bought around 1,000 chips, which are programmed already on 15.5. So from January on, we definitely also want to integrate this 15.6 frequency. It's possible. We already checked it in Japan.
In Holland, the new PLL set will be called the TKS-326 from Audiosonic. Elsewhere, it's the Sanjin ATS-801. The set also includes medium and long wave, plus FM stereo if you use the headphones. The price, around $140, or about £75. Once again, a set we'll be reviewing in more detail in the weeks to come. It's now in production and certainly represents an interesting trend. Well, Vimfan Amsal, coming back to you, is there anything from the huge South Korean stand on the other side of the exhibition?
No, I had a good look around because I had expectations when I saw that stand, that big stand from Korea, but I didn't find anything of a special interest to the shortwave listener there.
What about advice then that we're giving to shortwave manufacturers? Is the relationship between shortwave radio stations and the receiver manufacturers getting better? Because in the past there's been no contact at all.
No, well, it goes up and down. It depends mainly on specific people that are employed by the different manufacturers. Sometimes you think you have established a good contact and it's running very well for, let's say, a few months, and then all of a sudden somebody is replaced by somebody else who doesn't have the real interest perhaps in the same field or going or thinking along the same lines, and then it may present a problem again. We have seen, for example, the introduction of the Philips, the D2924, the digital receiver. We have had conversations about the whole before this receiver actually was developed. And when it was introduced, it showed a top limit of 15,450 kilohertz. Well, if they had contacted us during the manufacturing process of the whole set, we would certainly have advised them to run it up till 16 megs. Now, our contacts with Philips are improved after that, and they are looking into the fact whether they can adjust the software of the receiver involved to make the top limit 16 megs, which includes, also, of course, also the outside portion of the 19-meter band.
Well, one subject we haven't touched on, finally, Vim, is satellites. They're also represented here.
Well, going to this exhibition, you certainly could not avoid satellite reception, because a number of interesting-looking dish antennas, varying in diameter between 1 and 3 meters, are standing outside the exhibition hall, receiving the Russian Horizont satellites, for example, and producing a very nice quality picture on the various monitors. It seems that despite a lot of discussion on this subject, whether it is allowed or not to receive satellites of this kind, there is already a large industry providing all the necessary equipment to bring the space age into our living room.
And perhaps this is a good opportunity to ask our head of programs at Radio Netherlands, Bert Steinkamp, whether we'll ever be on the cable systems abroad. A number of listeners have remarked on this, including two very detailed letters from Tracy Wood in Oregon, USA, and A.J. Berkels here in Holland, who say that if we can put a signal onto the Hilversum cable system, as we do at the moment, why can't we appear on cable systems, say, in the United States?
Well, that's the sort of question we are looking into, and we'll have to look into quite a bit more deeply in periods to come, because it's clear that the technological developments in the media field will have their impact on our type of work as well. Of course, everybody is talking about domestic coverage, but it's quite clear to us that the international coverage is committed in one way or another, in one period or another, maybe not next year, but certainly in years to come. It's quite a field of points you have to take into consideration. There is, say, the state of the operation in the receiver of that signal. What sort of commercialism do they apply, and how does that compare to our statutes? Are we free to do so or are we not? Then there is the general position of the European broadcasters within the European Broadcasting Union, who are trying to formulate their position in general, and to which we will have to adhere, obviously. Also, obviously, it's quite clear that if we are on the cable in Hilversum, we should try to modernize our transcription service for instance, the United States, which has always been an enormous market for us. We would hate to lose it. And we are in discussion with one or two stations over there using satellites in future instead of sending tapes and studying the possibilities of going on cable systems wherever in the world where there is an interest. And it's our job first to study it and then, of course, also where possible to generate that sort of interest.
But if somebody picks us up on a shortwave radio in the United States, for example, and feeds an output into their cable system, are they breaking a law?
It depends on national legislation. The standard phraseology is insofar as your national legislation does not prevent this. Well, then technological developments are overtaking us, are overtaking all of us, and we shall have to look into that matter as well, because we can't turn a blind eye to it. It would be nonsense.
This is Media Network, covering the full spectrum of the world of radio in a form easy to digest.
Now to the Media News segment of today's programme. This past Tuesday, there were new problems in the radio war between the United States and Cuba. Dennis Powell reports now from New York.
The first skirmish has taken place in the radio war between the U.S. and Cuba. On Monday night, Cuban transmissions caused heavy interference to six clear channel medium wave stations in the United States, one of those stations more than 2,500 miles from Cuba. That station is KSL in Salt Lake City, Utah, operating on 1,160 kilohertz. Chief Engineer John Daynell says the station has been jammed sporadically before.
It started towards the end of December last year. Was the first time we started getting reports of it, and it went on for several months pretty continually.
After a few weeks, it became apparent that Cuba was testing transmitters on several frequencies, one at a time.
The Cubans seemed to start alternating frequencies. They weren't on 1160, which is our channel, every night. They turn up elsewhere, and then they come back, and then they go elsewhere, and then they come back. Then, a month and a half or so ago, mysteriously, they just disappeared. We haven't had any problem until last night again, and now they're back.
They did indeed come back, but this time on six clear channel frequencies. The new Cuban transmissions were heard on 570 kilohertz, 650 kilohertz, 670 kilohertz, 1,040 kilohertz, 1,160 kilohertz, and 1,380 kilohertz. One station affected for the first time was WHO in Des Moines, Iowa, where President Reagan was once a sportscaster. WHO operates on 1040 kilohertz, the same frequency the administration wants to use for Radio Marti, a news station broadcasting to Cuba. Abe Barron, the general manager of WHO, says he believes that's why Cuba chose his station's frequency to jam.
All we know is that we've never before had any interference from a Cuban station. Now we do.
But is the interference deliberate? Barron quotes Fidel Castro.
He himself said so 2 weeks ago. Now he's doing it.
While it's known that the Cuban government has several 500,000-watt Czechoslovakian transmitters, it's not believed they're being used to their full potential yet.
We know that they've got a 500,000-watt transmitter on 1040, and we're pretty confident that they were utilizing more than 50,000 watts of power last night, but it's doubtful they were going full blast.
John Daynell says his station, KSL, normally broadcasts nearly 1,000 miles in every direction without noticeable interference, but not when the Cuban transmitters are on.
As close in as about 60 miles from Salt Lake City, up in one of the canyons, we had reported mobile interference, and the Cuban was audible underneath KSL.
And he says even a little interference can make listening unpleasant.
They can certainly be very detrimental to the programming, making it very annoying to listen to. During the early evening hours, we run a talk program from 7 until midnight, basically, we're talk. And if they're playing music, that's most distracting.
While many American broadcasters say the plan to put Radio Marti on the air is responsible for the new Cuban transmissions, the U.S. State Department says it's the other way around. The State Department says Cuba has, for a long time, planned to blanket the medium waves with essentially the same program in Spanish. This would make Cuba a very powerful radio force in Central America on medium wave. The State Department says Radio Marti is not the reason Cuba is turning on its new transmitters. Instead, it's just a very convenient excuse.
Sometimes I wonder where I've been, who I am, do I fit in? Make believing is hard alone.
Well, I suppose those words could be applied to Radio Pakistan, which some months ago elected to use a frequency in the new 13 megahertz shortwave broadcasting ban laid down at the World Administrative Radio Conference in Geneva back in 1979. The new 13 megahertz ban doesn't come into official use until 1989, but already many stations are operating outside the regular broadcasting bands quite legally because there simply isn't room. Moving out as far as 13605 kHz for a broadcast service is quite unusual, though, since not many listeners would automatically check that part of the shortwave dial for broadcast radio stations. The only other broadcasting service of sorts has been Iceland, which uses a 13 MHz frequency to reach its fishing fleet. But as from this Sunday, September the 5th, Pakistan will have a companion on 13 MHz, Israel. Between 17:45 and 23:25 hours UTC, Kol Israel's external service will use 13745 kHz for foreign language broadcasts to Europe and North America, and English comes at 20 and 22:30 UTC, 13745. In addition, the Hebrew Home Service will go out between 04 and 06:10, and also 18 to 23:10 hours on 13725 kHz. So maybe 13 MHz will gradually fill up. Also, presumably from the Middle East, a mysterious station playing nothing but continuous Arabic pop music has appeared on both 9890 and 11590 kHz between 20 and 22 hours UTC. And here's what it sounded like last night. Well, as you can see, a very strong signal. And you may have noticed, too, that another station, this time in Lebanon, the King of Hope, on 6215 kHz, has got stronger. The owners of this religious station say they've increased the power to 50 kilowatts 24 hours a day, and we'll have further news about other plans they have in next week's programme. And last night, I found the Voice of Free China, Taipei, Taiwan, on that Chinese receiver we spoke about earlier on, here at Firato, closing down at 21:30 UTC on 9610 kHz. Not bad reception at the moment, which is unusual.
This is the Voice of Free China, bidding you so long and very best wishes from Taipei, Taiwan, the Republic of China.
Now to the Pacific and our media correspondent, Arthur Cushion.
Philippines, a new medium wave station is DWDJ, broadcasting from Manila and heard closing at 1600. The station actually operates from 2100 to 1600 UTC and gives the call WDJ, reports Ray Crawford of Gladstone in Queensland. Solomon Islands. The Solomon Islands Broadcasting Commission opened its new facilities on August the 7th. The transmitters were heard on 5020 kHz, and at 06:30, the Governor-General opened the new station, remarking that it had been operating SIBC for 30 years, and previous to that, broadcast in the Solomons had been during the war years from AFRS at Guadalcanal. Vanuatu 3945, the program heard here opening at 1900 with announcement in Pidgin after the national anthem. The station now announces that their schedule is 1900 to 1115 UTC, and here's part of the Pidgin sign-on at 1900.
Good morning, everyone. While you serve listening to the peaceful activities on Radio Vanuatu, and the studio dams have been captured in the peace of luck.
Western Samoa, Apia, on operating on the medium wave frequency of 540 kHz, heard opening at 1700 in English and Samoan. We also hear them at the close of the day, that's 1000 UTC on the same frequency. Now for some news from Africa and Latin America. Firstly, Ecuador on 4656 CRE, Guayaquil, Ecuador, noted with music around 10:30. At 10:44, the station has the national anthem, full identification, and then network news. Venezuela, Radio Tecra, heard on 4830. This transmitter opens with test music at 09:58 and at 10:00 has the national anthem and full station identification. Signals are very good at the moment as San Jose, Costa Rica has left that frequency. Some new frequencies of interest here in the South Pacific, and firstly Sweden. Stockholm is to make a change on September 5 and return to 21610 kHz. The broadcast is 1100 to 1130 in English to Australia and New Zealand, and the frequency replaces the present one of 17825. Moving south to Antarctica on 6012, the station of the Antarctic network of AFN. This one has been heard, Armed Forces Antarctic Network, with top 40 programming, and that's around 0800. And at 0900, signals beginning to fade, reports Harry Weatherly of Melbourne and DX Post.
Thanks, Arthur. And that's where we have to close this week's programme from Ferrato. I'm off now to collect my share of publicity brochures, stickers, and, of course, free plastic bags that everyone's giving away around here. So, for the moment, this is Jonathan Marks on behalf of the whole team saying back soon. Bye for now. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.